primary considerations that we had, again, primary charge here is we were reviewing feasibility, the engineering feasibility of bicycle and pedestrian facility alternatives. Approximately 2.5 miles between Veterans Park to Cupertino Park. There are some things that, in the interest of time and in the interest of money, that we didn't address. As I mentioned previously, we had a very accelerated time frame, and we felt it was important to get this to this point in time to be able to then move forward with making a decision. The considerations that you see, and I understand for those of you in the back, usually I'm not a slide reader, but recognizing you probably can't see much lower than here, I'll kind of run through them. These are the same considerations when we were out in Bayview in August at the town hall meeting. Same considerations that we presented that we would look at are indeed addressed in varying detail within the study. Traffic operations and safety for all. And when I say for all, I mean for vehicular traffic, as well as for bicycles and pedestrians. Americans with Disabilities Act compliance, again, thinking about primarily pedestrians in that regard. Need and probable use. The availability of alternatives, looking at the different things that we looked at. And then the estimated additional or incremental cost, which again, that is a part of the complete streets requirement. So now you have a sense of why are we here and what we're looking at. So let's get a sense of what we have out there today with existing conditions. This is like the best exhibit. It's also an opportunity for me to pause and take a drink of water to refuel. We are also broadcasting live to upstairs. So, therefore, I've been told I need to stand right here, except when I'm changing the slide, and that's okay. Well, anyway, this is a typical, this is like if you took the existing home bridge and you cut a slice through it, what it looks like. There are a couple things here I want to point out. One is that the home bridge itself is actually two parallel structures. At the tight arch span itself, it basically is one structure combined together. But for most of its length, it's actually two separate structures right next to each other that go down to the ground on two separate piers. And there's about a 4-foot difference there in the middle. So speaking of the home bridge, just a brief summary again why we're here. Big picture, we have a very large project coming down the pike. It's going to be extremely challenging when the time comes when we're under construction. There's actually three components to the I-794 Lake Freeway home bridge rehab. In the upper right, that orange block, is the I-74 East-West. For those of you who recall, as a part of the Marquette Interchange Project, I-794 along the south side of downtown was rebuilt up to the Milwaukee River. Those remaining structures that take us from the Milwaukee River, which is on the upper part of the page, down towards the lake, those will be completely torn down and reconstructed as part of the project. The second phase of the project is in yellow, which is the lake interchange. For those structures, we're presently planning for there to be concrete overlays. And finally, the home bridge itself, the 2.5 miles, will be doing quite a bit. This is in the midpoint of a bridge's life. You have to do major maintenance. And as part of that major maintenance, in this case, it includes replacing the concrete deck driving surface, cleaning all of the steel underneath, as well as making the structural improvements that are going to be necessary to extend the design life for the home a minimum of 40 to 50 years to the middle of this decade. Now, this three-year construction period is going to begin in 2013, and the overall budget for this is $275 to $350 million. Since we had our last meeting in August out of Deal of Renton, the department, in a partnership with the City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, is also looking at a couple of the ramps, specifically those east-west ramps that lead from I-794 to Lincoln Memorial Drive, and determining if there are reconfiguration or removal options there. It's kind of a separate track, does not impact the traffic analysis or things that we did, because, again, we looked at big picture traffic demands between basically going across the Hone Bridge, which would not be impacted by those ramps. It's also nice, I think, to point out, you know, I think the department has had a pretty long and positive partnership working with City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County on, you know, transportation planning efforts, the Lakefront Planning Committee that just met. And certainly that was one of the things that came out of it. So the department is in tune and flexible and adjustable when it comes to meeting with our local partners and working on common solutions. The other thing that we have out there in terms of existing conditions is the Bay Villa to Milwaukee route. Again, this was Alternative 9 from the 2002 study and has since been somewhat modified. As part of that, the overall construction budget for this improvement is going to be about $1.85 million. It's actually the first phase. The raised bike lane as well as the bike striping along Bay Street were completed this year. There's still a couple of years left next year along several of the streets on the south of Bay Street on Russell and Bay itself, as well as on the north end with Water and Erie. And you'll see those a little bit more. I think you can see them there. It's kind of near the top. I think you all know where it is. And then that middle part, the Canadian Pacific Railroad Corridor, that's going to be constructed in 2013. And basically it connects Veterans Park to Cupertino Park and also incorporates part of the Oak Ridge Trail. One of the nice things, though, is this also is part of that 162-mile network that runs from Chicago to Sheboygan. So having that connection in place is going to make it so that bikes can already be able to enjoy that kind of a scenic bike ride. So now that we've given a sense of, from a highway perspective as well as from a bikeway perspective, what we presently have down here, we want to share with you a little bit about the study criteria that we used as a part of developing some of these alternatives. On the left, we have the interstate criteria. Again, I-794, the Hone Bridge, is an interstate freeway. And so we looked at the 12-foot travel lane width as well as the shoulder width. Presently, we have 6-foot sort of inside or left lanes out on the Hone Bridge, as well as 10-foot right shoulder or outside shoulders for breakdowns or emergencies. Those could actually be reduced to a minimum of 4 feet and 8 feet. Again, it's not desirable, but applying our objective engineering criteria, it is something that would be allowable. And then vertical clearances over the various things. I think for those of you who really dug into the report, at varying times we were going over the freeway, under the freeway, over railroads, over the river, not through the woods. But we did also have a suspended path. And so all of those things, again, meeting our engineering criteria that we apply for all freeways, we wanted to make sure that we applied here. Now, with the shared use path criteria, we looked at a 14-foot wide path. Again, thinking back to the safe and efficient system that we're operating to or wanting to plan here, that traffic operations and safety led us to go with a 14-foot wide. That's the desirable, if you will, from the department's perspective for the width of the path. From a safety standpoint, let me just say this again. All of our alternatives, including 42-foot high, or 42, wow, that would be really high, a 42-inch high concrete vertical barrier, as well as outside fencing. And so there would be physical separation between the automobiles and the folks on the bike and ped path. Again, because pedestrian loading is different than vehicle loading, we also took into account the pedestrian bridge load, as well as, again, as I mentioned, the ADA compliance when it came to the access ramps and grades. So that gives you kind of a sense of the various engineering things that we took into account as we then, you know, starting with a fairly clean palette, began looking at alternatives. Once again, for those of you down at Villa Brenton in August, you may have recalled that I described the four primary alternatives. They were as follows. It's not going to work. I wanted to use hand gestures, but it isn't going to work. The first alternative is generally basically removing a travel lane on one of the structures and not making any structural modifications beyond what's up there right now. Second alternative was to maintain that travel lane and then widen the existing structure to accommodate the shared use path. The third alternative was to go either above or below the existing freeway. And then the final alternative, number four, was a separate structure off to the side. Because, as you recall that I mentioned before, we're building this improvement to last a minimum of 40 to 50 years, no temporary configurations were looked at, only permanent ones. And of those 11 total alternatives, six were eliminated for a variety of reasons relating to feasibility, the most prominent of those being the one that would hang beneath I-794. And that resulted in five alternatives being carried forward. Alternative 1A, and again, I think you'll also see, once we get into this part of the presentation, these specific renderings are also included on the boards that are not only here within our cafeteria, but are also located in the hallway down a little further down here. The first alternative would reduce the northbound Interstate 794 from its existing three travel lanes to two. And the shared use path would be shown there on the east side of the structure. We developed an estimate for that for year 2011 delivery costs, including the costs for design and construction, as well as for those things which we may encounter in the field, of approximately $9.4 million. Now, I just want to point out on those the two red ellipses, ovals, that you see there, that's a pair of instances where we have reduced the shoulder width from what's out there existing. The inside shoulder and the outside shoulder would be reduced, each be reduced by 2 feet, so it would be 4 foot on the inside as compared to six, and then 8 foot on the outside as compared to the existing 10. Alternative 1B, again, removes a lane of northbound traffic. But rather than have the shared use path on the east side of the structure, instead it would be in the center of the structure. And with that, because a little bit of that, the bike path or the shared use path itself would be kind of overlapping that 4 foot gap, because again, vehicles aren't necessarily going to be driving there. That's only or heavy vehicles, it's only the shared use path. We only see a 2 foot reduction on the inside shoulder. With this one, the cost is $27.5 million, and in part that's due to the need to actually go up over the freeway at the south end and then to go underneath and around the freeway at the north end. The third alternative that we have here, alternative 2A, there would be no reduction in travel lanes. It would keep the three northbound lanes, and instead, that northbound structure would need to be widened in order to accommodate the shared use path. With this one, the estimated cost for delivery of that was $76.4 million. Can you see the red arrow from the back? Oh, good. It's a thickness of 4 for the PowerPoint junkies. That I wanted to show you is what we had to do when we get to the tide arch itself, which is the thing that looks like an arch of a certain fast food restaurant, is that because there was insufficient room to keep the path right next to the roadway and keep it on the inside of the arch, it would simply have to go around the outside. From the user of the path perspective, it's not something that's really noticeable, but it does create some other challenges that we'll talk about a little bit later. This is my second favorite drawing because it's engineering-like here. It was also in the draft report. But basically explains a little bit about kind of why the cost of that one also goes up to $76 million. Basically, if you can see the bold face structural members there in the upper right of the screen, that's the new steel that would support the shared use path. But if you look at this Y shape of the pier, the piers were very economical when they were designed back in the 1970s. And so we were not able to put additional weight over at the very edge of the pier and be able to support it with the existing pier. And so what you see, the bold-faced pier, that is new piers that we would need to construct and that would actually carry the weight of that shared use path down into the ground to be able to accommodate it. The fourth alternative, alternative 3B, again, there's no reduction in travel lanes with that one. It takes the shared use path up above I-794. And if you'll notice here in the red box, it's 17 feet 9 inches from the pavement surface to the bottom of that structure. So, and that again is consistent with our interstate highway criteria. And then the overall estimated delivery cost for that would be $95.5 million. The final alternative, the fifth alternative, but called alternative four, once again, no reduction in travel lanes, and basically built a parallel structure approximately 30 feet minimum offset from the existing honed bridge structure. Now, in this specific case, that 30 foot is what I have circled there. And again, because of its crossing over the Milwaukee River, it needs to, at the very middle of it, be at the same height, as well as to have the same lateral clearance across the river in order for that port traffic to get through. So again, that gives you a kind of a snapshot of, we'll be taking questions later. That gives you kind of a snapshot of the five alternatives that we have. And I want to just then share with you briefly some of the evaluation that we performed in order to get a sense of how each of those would impact next. First, we looked at traffic. And again, because a couple of our alternatives involve taking away one lane of traffic northbound, we needed to give a sense of what that would mean operationally, not just today, but also as we look out, you know, partway into the overall design life of our project. So, generally speaking, if you look at these two lower curves, this is all calendar year 2010. Those two lower curves that pretty much mirror each other at the bottom, that's our Saturday and Sunday traffic in both directions on I-794/the Honed Bridge. Not surprisingly, this blue one that you see, that's what we have during the weekday. Those two peaks are probably recognizable to anybody who drives. And this is the morning peak and the afternoon peak. Overall, we have 48,000 vehicles a day. And in the morning, we have about 4,500 vehicles. And of those, nearly 78% or roughly 3,500 of those are heading northbound. So there's a lot of folks heading into towards downtown and beyond there in the morning. And then in the afternoon, it's kind of a similar deal in which we have about 3,300 vehicles that are heading southbound. And again, from points downtown and beyond, back across south towards Bayview and points beyond there. Now, one of the things that we looked at is, well, we just had, until last Friday, as those of you who have Facebook or tweeted, which we have on our project sheet here, that the construction operations have been essentially concluded up on the Honed Bridge, and so we're back to six lanes total at this time. But drawing upon the extensive traffic data collection that we have for during construction, we did see a marked decrease. And so, you know, I mean, certainly, kind of like anything, I mean, for folks, if they go out there on a given day, you know, maybe they'll see traffic flowing smoothly, maybe they'll see traffic stop and go. But one of the good things that the department has is we have continuous traffic counters, and so we were able to see that actually a fair number of folks stopped taking the home when it was under construction. So I think over the next several years we'll see that also continue to bounce around as we go through our construction period. Just a little bit about the traffic analysis methodology that we use. 2010 Highway Capacity Manual is the specific tool on our traffic engineering toolbox that we use for our objective traffic engineering assessment. It's the latest edition of a manual that was first published back in 1950, so about 60 years ago. And as kind of a personal aside, I've been using and applying this methodology since grad school at Purdue in the late 80s, so certainly very familiar with its application and was able to provide good guidance to it as we were moving forward. Level of service is what basically is how we define how well or how poorly freeway operations are going. And it's based on traffic density. In other words, how congested traffic feels at a given point in time. How free you are to maneuver back and forth. You know, how closely vehicles are. You know, I think somebody remarked before the meeting, it seems like people are, you know, following more closely than they used to. Well, you know, as more traffic gets out within a given stretch of roadway, that's what we're going to see. Those peak hour traffic operations, we give it a grade. It's like school, from A to F, where A is the best, and F, well, could be improved. Generally, the department's criteria for freeways around the state is to have level of service C during the design year or forecast year peak hour. But for Milwaukee County, again, because of the increased amount of folks that we have here, LOSD is the lowest acceptable design year standard. So how does that translate into where we are today? On our left, alternatives 2A, 3B, and 4, which do not take away a lane of traffic. In other words, it's kind of what we have today. Three northbound lanes, and as we look at the northbound heading towards downtown in the morning peak, right now we're at a middle level of service C. 60 miles an hour. Basically, it's free flow speed. You know, you're not encountering too terribly much congestion, unless, of course, there's an incident or weather or things of that nature. So that, according to our objective criteria, would be acceptable. The two northbound lanes, in other words, under 1A or 1B, we would have LOSD, and it would actually be kind of a low D, starts to get a little bit more dense, and the way that level of service works is the speeds really don't start dropping off until you reach that tipping point. And so today's conditions under that criteria would be borderline acceptable. Now, looking out into the future, we looked out 20 years. Basically, the department and sewer pack, when it comes to developing traffic forecasts, we're the region-wide experts. And, you know, we've been doing this for quite a long time, almost 45 years. And, you know, as we go forward in time, there are continued refinements that we do in order to make the traffic forecast more credible and more acceptable. We actually looked at two growth rates. There's a what we call the continued growth rate, which basically is similar to what the sewer pack model developed for us, roughly less than 1% per year. However, you know, we acknowledge that there's a bit of uncertainty there, and we felt that it was in the public's interest to do a sensitivity analysis. And so we actually developed a second forecast, which cranked that growth rate down to about 0.5% a year. And in doing so, those numbers are consistent with the year 2023 forecast that were developed for the 2002 study, but again, we're looking out at 2035. Not going to bore you with the numbers other than saying that they do grow. Those numbers, of course, are also in the summary report. The bottom line is, again, the alternatives that do not take away a lane of traffic, we still have basically a low level of service C or a high level of service D operation during that morning peak hour. Speeds are still flowing at 60 miles an hour. Under the alternatives 1A and 1B, where we're down to two northbound lanes, there we're at a low level of service E or a level of service F. And again, you know, that takes the speeds down from anywhere from approximately 8 to 13 miles an hour, and that's below the department's standard for Milwaukee County. And once again, that doesn't really reflect the impacts of things like weather or incidents or things of that nature. So moving on to structural feasibility, again, all of these, shall we say, are feasible. In other words, everything, every alternative that you see here that we took forward to this point in the study is something that could be built. However, you know, some of them have present, shall we say, a few more challenges than others when it comes to not just the construction of them, but the overall maintaining of that structure moving forward. Alternative 1A, very, very mild. It just requires a little bit of widening of one ramp south end. On 1B, as I mentioned previously, in addition to that widening at the south end, you would have to go up and over northbound to get into the middle, And then once you get to the north end, you would need to dive down and go underneath in order to tie in at Lincoln Memorial Drive. Now, the alternative two-way, as we mentioned, that's the one where at that main tie arch, you would need to go around the outside. There would be some significant retrofits. And again, you know, that's kind of like structural talk, but anytime you start talking structural talk, the cash register is ringing. And again, that's why the price for that one is higher. And it would also require those new substructure reports that we talked about, the red arrow that goes down to the ground. Alternative 3B, again, because it's up above, that weight, the additional weight from that from the shared use path, would mean that additional structural retrofits would need to be done along the 2.5 mile length of the home in order to be able to continue to support it. And then finally, alternative 4, which is more of a construction issue, is just that it would need to be done a little bit special just because we need to maintain the Port of Milwaukee's operations. The access locations, as I think described a bit more in the study, getting on and off to the trail under, again, the 1A alternative, the 2A, the 4, in other words, where you're always off to the east side, is relatively straightforward. It's similar to the alternatives that were looked at in the previous study, where you kind of go up Car Ferry, go across, come down Lincoln Memorial. So it's relatively straightforward. The alternatives 1B and 3B, as I mentioned, it's a bit more difficult. Because this feasibility study was limited in time and in money and in scope, there are some things that we acknowledge that are still out there that we did not dive into. One of them is long-term maintenance agreements. Certainly, exactly how long would the trail be opened and who would be responsible for cleaning and who would be responsible for snow removal, all of that, not part of our feasibility study. That's an operational issue that once a decision is made, that would be something that would need to be discussed. In addition, impacts to adjacent facilities. The home bridge is up in the air, but there's a lot of stuff down on the ground. And while we attempted to account for that somewhat with our cost estimates, for those of you who wondered what kinds of things would go into a contingency, there are many important facilities here in Milwaukee that are part of that. The Port of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, the Henry W. Meyer Festival Park, as well as other utilities, railroads, local roads, parking lots. There are parts of some of those paths that get pretty close to the shoreline and some of the shore walls that are tied in. It's nothing that cannot be overcome, but just want to make folks aware that as a part of this limited feasibility study, we didn't really get down onto the ground of what some of those impacts would be. And finally, bridge inspection and maintenance considerations. The home bridge has been, as you may recall from previous meetings, because of how it was designed and constructed initially, it will continue to need to be inspected even after our rehabilitation project that's going to be wrapped up in 2016. It will still need to be subject to a fairly detailed inspection on a regular basis. And so, just so that people were aware going forward what some of those impacts would mean, under Alternative 1A, for instance, when we're doing inspections or maintenance, the path would need to be closed. 1B, again, 1B, we have two lanes going northbound. Well, under that scenario, we would actually need to take it down to one northbound lane whenever we're doing inspections or maintenance. On the Alternative 2A, we talked about going around the outside of that tide arch. There are structural connections and things in there which are very, shall we say, challenging and complicated. And while we can do it from an engineering standpoint, we also have a little bit of unease about covering up some of those critical areas that we can get to right now to actually touch and feel and inspect that we would no longer be able to do so. Alternative 3B, minimal impact to some of those activities. And finally, alternative four, whenever we needed to actually inspect that facility, of course, it would need to be closed. So, that in 32 minutes is a Reader's Digest summary for those of you who did not necessarily catch every last aspect of what was in that the summary. And a lot of you now are wondering what's next. Well, we are here right now, and as I mentioned, we have these blue sheets that that we'd like you to turn in tonight. We're looking to collect those by 5 p.m. on November 30th. So whether it's an email or whether it's these comments and things, that's kind of the period that we've chosen to stop things. And then coming up in the winter of 2011, which we're looking at here by the end of the year, the department is going to release its study decision of what we plan to do. And then flowing out of that, cost agreements and maintenance agreements as needed. And then, of course, the bigger project will continue to proceed on until we get to the summer of 2013, where construction operations will begin for about 3 years. So with that, got the same guy. That's a different guy. There we go. All right. Okay, so with that, we're going to go to question and answer after like a 10-second break because I'm going to get a drink of water. And I'm also going to leave contact information up on the screen, which is, you know, also has our Facebook, Twitter, website information. So with that, you, sir, with the...
Ryan?
Yes?
The lieutenant would like to take the floor.
That's all right.
Good evening. My name is Lieutenant William A. Brown, and I oversee the day-to-day operations of the Police Services Bureau Patrol Division. On behalf of Sheriff Clark, as well as my captain, Captain Tom Meriden, they were unable to attend this meeting. So I'll be giving a prepared statement from Sheriff Clark. The Sheriff's Office understands that the potential strategies to see a bicycle lane added to the home bridge range from closing vehicle traffic lanes and building bike paths separated from traffic by the use of concrete barriers to more costly and complex construction of a structure to accommodate a bike pathway separate from the current bridge. The Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office remains opposed to the addition of a bike lane on the home. Interstate freeway bridges are inherently dangerous. As Sheriff Clark has previously noted, bikes and heavy vehicle traffic are not a good mix. I don't care what kind of safety barrier you're going to put up. Already this year, the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office has seen a death of one motorist who was hit by a car while tending to his disabled vehicle in the southbound traffic lane of the home. In that very unforgiving environment of the interstate freeway span, motorists have little room to maneuver or room for an error. Adding a bicycle lane to that environment without adequate space or a preventive barrier that removes the distraction of the cyclist from the motorist's attention is a recipe for catastrophe. And most critically, the removal of a lane of traffic for such an endeavor will take an already congested artery and make it more so. So on behalf of the sheriff, thank you for giving me your time.
You right there. Do you still have a question? Is your first?
I do have a question.
Yes.
Just so we can put this in perspective, the cheapest option, $9.4 million. But what we completed recently, the resurfacing, that cost about $7 million. Am I correct? I know that's not in the PowerPoint.
Yeah, yes, that's correct.
And that's like a disposable surface. Am I understanding that correctly? That's going to be ripped out. It's just a temporary fix until we can...
Right, that is correct. The pavement, the driving surface repairs that we've just completed right now were basically a patchwork to hold things together during construction because keeping in mind right now, we've got, you know, the three lanes heading in one direction on the home. And once we get into, you know, whatever traffic configuration we come up with during construction, you know, it's going to continue to take a beating and need to be able to last. So,
Brian?
Yes?
You said 7, it was
12 feet. Oh, sorry. It was 8 million.
I just wanted to compare, have something to compare the number to what seemed like a lot of money to me.
That is correct. You there in the very back.
What's the estimated cost for the entire project versus the
question was, what is the estimated cost of the entire project and what is the cost of the most expensive option? The cost of the entire project is estimated at $275 to $350 million, and the cost of the most expensive option is approximately $95.4 million, which is alternative 3B. You, right there. Does that also include the... Okay, I understand your question. Your question is, for any of the alternatives, is the cost that is shown there, does it reflect the cost of dealing with underlying utilities and buildings, etc.? The answer is somewhat. And the reason being is, again, as part of our feasibility study, we did assume modest contingency for having to deal with things. But again, there, particularly when we get into some of the various developments that lease from other landlords and things under there, what we may find is that those costs, if they get thrown back on the project, could drive it up. Now, to answer the second part of your question, is there any number that's been developed for the long-term maintenance / snow removal associated with any of these alternatives? The answer is no. That was beyond the scope of our study. Yes, ma'am. Right there.
Yeah, I'm just curious. The money that your company got, how much did you get, and where did that come from already? I mean, you've been paid to do a study.
Well, here, let me just back up.
That's
perfect. I'm going to give you a response, and you tell me if I'm answering your question. Okay. Okay. And by the way, I work for the department, so
okay.
I don't work for it.
All right. Okay.
But the question is approximately, like, where did the money come from that was to pay for this specific study? And the answer is that study amount was part of the project budget that was put forward.
Okay. Thank
you. Was that the only part of your question?
Yeah. That.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make sure. You, sir, in the purple.
Sorry. Thank you.
I'm nearsighted, so forgive me.
You talked about the level of service with these various projects, and when you were talking about some that had a favorable level of service, you were speaking in terms of 60 miles an hour, and that something gets a level of service as in D or an F when that speed only drops to 47 miles an hour. The speed limit on the home bridge is 50. So how are you? Are you factoring in that everyone adds 10 miles per hour to their speed limit?
That's a great question. We had quite a debate about that internally because the topic of free flow speed. Because on the one hand, if we use a high free flow speed, overly high, then what it may show, it may underestimate what the impact is. But if we use a free flow speed in our analysis, which reflects the true speed limit, then we would get, what's the proper term? We would receive criticism from the other side that we're over-predicting how bad things would be. And so in kind of a round table of the traffic experts, you know, not getting into the issue of the speed limit versus the actual speed, we felt that for the purposes of the traffic analysis, a 60-mile-an-hour, shall we say, free-flow speed was a realistic assumption for the analysis. And if we took it down to 55, then everything sort of correspondingly, things would dip down from there, because the analysis takes that speed, whatever free flow speed you input, along with the traffic volume, develops a density, and then estimates the resulting speed. So if you tell it traffic's going slower, it will, the level of service that comes out with that speed will be lower still. Did that answer all of your question?
I think it did, but I think the speed limit should be considered, because 47 miles an hour seems reasonable to me, and you're flagging alternative 1A as a traffic impact, as a red flag and major concern, going 47 miles an hour. I don't think that 60 miles an hour is a reasonable.
I think part of that is a personal judgment. What we looked at is the department's objective criteria.
It's actually the law. It's a speed limit.
I appreciate that, but I think you understand as well that if I came in and used a free flow speed of 50 miles an hour, the same individuals would criticize, different ones would criticize and say that, oh no, I've been out there, I'd go like 55, 60 over the hump, which I don't, by the way. Sheriff, Lieutenant, if you're listening. All right.
Thank you.
You in the blue.
Yeah. The level of service reduction that you were talking about, you might have said this, so maybe I missed it. Is that only for peak traffic times, so just basically an hour in the morning, an hour in the afternoon, or is that overall?
The analysis, well, okay, that's a great question. It also highlights a subtlety that's of data that we included in the report. Oh, sorry about that. His question was, does the level of service that is presented, is that just for the peak hour of the day, correct?
Yeah, bro.
Okay. The analysis that we performed as part of this feasibility study only looked at the, let's call it the heavy directional single hour of the day. And for those of you who dug into the report, you'll notice that we looked at southbound in the afternoon. Just in case somebody was wondering if we had some alternatives that took away a southbound lane rather than a northbound lane. Thought it was important to include it, but didn't really talk about it as a part of this presentation. What we did not do, for instance, we could have gone in for every single hour and performed the same analysis and see how it would perform. But the standard engineering criteria that the department uses is to look at the morning peak and as well as the afternoon peak to determine what's going on. We felt that given the significant imbalance in traffic, that sort of by inspection, it wasn't worth looking at the northbound PM, because we felt that the numbers would just be fine. So we didn't get into it. So to answer your question, yes, we looked at that 1 hour. You, sir, over in the corner, right there.
My question is that what I find disturbing about your analysis is that it's all based on sort of engineering, but have you considered at all, say, the benefits of alternative transportation improvements to be able to use your bikes? And not only that, you know, what it does to County Milwaukee, you know, in tandem such as that, don't seem to be part of your sort of evaluation.
Okay, the question was, did we consider some of those other things beyond the engineering feasibility analysis associated with this? And the answer is no. The 2002 study addressed some of those issues. We felt in the interest of time and in basically trying to keep the scope and schedule of this where it needed to be, a lot of those other things have been addressed, and we weren't going to cover that new ground. Yes, sir.
Brian, were there any discussions with the Department of Natural Resources about possibly designating this, since it connects to Lakeshore State Park, as a state trail, charging a trail fee for it, maybe even the Hank Aaron, too? Southeastern Wisconsin has kind of gotten a pass on trail passes, but if I ride in Waukesha, there's a sign, I got to have a trail pass, and that could possibly, over the course of 4 years, significantly offset, if not cover, the entire $9 million project.
The question was, did the department reach out to other agencies, in this specific case DNR, to look at potential costs, basically making it part of the state trail and then being able to charge a fee for it? The specific of that would be no. We didn't really get into the operational and funding details of this. A lot of it was focused strictly on the engineering and traffic. Believe me, everybody, as long as you keep raising hands, I'm going to pick them at rent. You, yeah, green with, like, yellow. Right there.
Yeah, the total cost of the bridge, you said, is like about $300 million. So if, you look at the total cost with the bike path and without the bike path, you don't have the bike path, do you actually save all $9 million? Or do you only save, say, $1 or $2 million? Because you still have to pave that third lane.
Okay, I think there were two questions that were in there. The first question was, what is the total cost of the project? The total cost of the project is $275 to $350 million. The other part of the question was, regarding the various costs that that we've laid out here tonight, would there, do these, I'm going to repeat this, and I want you to tell me if this is your question. Do those represent costs in addition to the work that we're already doing? Is that,
yeah, what's the delta? Or is it already, sunk cost?
All of the costs that you see are delta. They are increased costs. Just a second. Alderman Kovac is also here, so thanks for coming. All right, next question. Let's see. You in the Badger shirt.
I'm a bicyclist, and I use a bike in that area frequently, so I'm aware of some of the issues today. I think there's a lot of on-road requirements that you have to take to get from the north side to the south side, and you have to cross the river on one of those bridges. So I understand the objective is, the main objective, it would seem, would be improving safety, both in getting off the roads and in crossing the river. Have we considered simply building, let me back up, it sounds like there's some projects underway to already take some of that traffic off-road with the dedicated trails that you talked about earlier. What would, maybe you can't answer this question, but what would the cost be to build a dedicated surface bridge to accommodate pedestrians and bicycles, or perhaps modify the Water Street Bridge or one of those to cross the river? That's a long question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of how to summarize it.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying to do. All right. So the question is basically, number one, what would be the, and I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to tell you if I hit it, okay?
Okay.
What would be the cost associated with having a dedicated surface street kind of alternative with potentially some improvement to either a quote-unquote new crossing or improving an existing bridge?
Yes.
Okay. The answer is... as a part of the work that's going to be done in 2012, if you look up there, the upper left of the screen, the crossing, the current crossing of the Hank Aaron Trail across the Milwaukee River, and again, it's sharing it with roadway vehicles, but that's the waterway crossing that perhaps you're looking at. The center section, and for those of you upstairs, I apologize for stepping out of the screen, but basically between roughly Washington and Maple, approximately, there's an abandoned Canadian National, Canadian Pacific, railroad corridor bed that's going to be constructed in 2013. So to answer the first sort of part of the question, there is an alternative that is already in place that by 2013 is going to connect the Veterans Park to Cupertino Park. To answer the other part of your question, as a part of the study, we did not look at any, shall we say, new quote-unquote bridges other than the alternate four that it parallels the Hung Bridge. Choices. You and the safety vest.
Yes.
Okay.
What is the level of service of the other Milwaukee freeways in 2065 or whatever the design year is? My question is this going to be a Taj Mahal compared to the rest of the other freeways that we have?
The question was, what is the 2035 level of service for other freeways in Milwaukee County? The answer is, we don't have that information as a part of this study. However, back in the year 2000, SewerPAC performed a study of all of Southeast Wisconsin's freeways, and as a part of that, they looked at the various levels of service, In addition, their current regional transportation plan, which again is everyone's regional transportation plan, which is www.sewerpac.org, shows what the assumptions are in terms of additional freeway construction that that they see the department doing over the next 20 years. In terms of the specifics of what that cranks out into a level of service, that was not something that was part of our study. You, sir, in the white shirt, standing right there. Yes.
If the Yorktown lane were to be given over to bikes rather than cars as it is now.
I'm sorry. Can you hold on a second? We've got folks upstairs too, and they were just wondering. And I apologize for those of you upstairs, but could you please restart your question, sir?
In alternative 1A, the elimination of the northbound lane for cars, how wide would the shoulder be, and isn't that less than a full shoulder as compared to what it is today? Today we have three lanes and a full shoulder with alternative 1A. Wouldn't the shoulder be less than standard width under alternative 1A?
Okay, the question was, under alternative 1A, are the shoulders being, it appears that the shoulders are being reduced, and do they meet the minimum engineering criteria? The answer is yes to both. The inside shoulder is reduced from its existing 6 foot to 4 foot, and the existing outside shoulder is being reduced from 10 foot to 8 foot. And now I'm going to go over to the telephone. What is your question? This is your moment to shine. All right. The question was, will people be able to cross over from the between the freeway and the actual bike ped path? And the answer is, you know, yes, it would, because again, the concrete barrier there is going to be 42 inches high, so there would be ability to ability to do so. However, you know, again, that's only on the northbound side, and I think I would probably echo. I'm not a law enforcement person, nor do I play one on TV, but what I would honestly say is that the best strategy that you can have, if you have a disabled vehicle anywhere, if it's off on the shoulder, stay in your car and wait for help to come to you. I'm going to take one from the back. You. Yes. All right, this gentleman's question was, as a part of our feasibility study, did we include, as a part of things we looked at, was there a reversible lane that was considered to switch the traffic based on direction? The answer in brief is no, we did not look at that alternative because of the challenges that would be associated with basically switching that over. Again, our bridge deck is not one continuous bridge, it's two separate bridges. And then, you know, at some point, then we have to connect people back and forth across the two structures. So that was not an alternative that was looked at. Blue shirt, right there.
Thank you for the presentation. A lot of interesting information. But I wonder, one point you were making about this 25 level of service. So let's assume I live on the south side now, and I drive on the home bridge, and I actually obey the law. And I drive over there 50 miles per hour. 50 miles per hour, right?
The speed limit is 50 miles an hour on the Highland Ridge. That's correct. Interstate 794.
So So if I understood your presentation correctly, or one of your slides correctly, if I still live there in 2035 and I still drive over the Holland Bridge at 50 miles per hour, my commute time's exactly the same thing, right? It hasn't changed. And even if I drive it at 60 miles an hour, and 20, 30 years from now I'm driving at 10 miles less, 50 miles an hour, that's a total increase in my commute time over the Holland Bridge in less than 30 seconds, right?
So let me see if I can capture the question correctly. The question was with regard to the change in speed that's associated with 2035, whether you drive the speed limit or whether you drive above the speed limit, does it represent a modest reduction in speed? The answer is, yeah, the numbers are what the numbers are. However, I think it's also important to point out that, again, that maneuverability and things that we talked about of increasing the density is a part of it as well. And, you know, with the reduced shoulders, particularly with 1A, you know, certainly, as I mentioned, whether it's weather or incidents, the, shall we say, the flexibility of the roadway to be able to accommodate it would be a bit less. You, sir.
I know this whole issue has got everybody kind of up in arms, pro and con, so to speak. I don't know if you want to have a show of hands, who's for and who's against, but number one, as a person who drives a vehicle, I pay $95 a year for a license plate to use the freeway. How much are you going to charge a bicyclist to use the same freeway? There should be no free ride for anybody. And when I look at this whole thing, common sense tells me I could put a ferry boat across that harbor and I'd have money to last us the next 100 years. I'd have money left in my pocket. And because this, you're only going to be able to use this during the nice weather. The alternate route, you could design that could be almost used year-round at a lower level. The whole bridge, if you've ever been over it on a motorcycle, which I have many times, is a disaster when the wind is blowing. Forget about wintertime. And to put bikes up there, you can't have a railing. They're going to have to be in a cage, otherwise they're going to be blown off. And that's I'm not making this stuff up. I've been up on top of it. The other thing is, people are going to want to...
Is there a question?
They're going to want to gawk up there. They're going to want to gawk. So the question is, how much are we going to charge the bicyclists if we do use this? And when I look at that alternate route, how much time does the bicyclist save by interrupting the traffic?
Okay, I think the question was, and then there was like several parts of it, but the fundamental question was, did the study look at what bikes would be charged as a part of using this? And the answer is no. Again, we just kind of looked at the engineering sort of feasibility of it. Didn't really get into the operations and funding stream, et cetera. You, right? Yeah, you.
Do you have any data? I know you have data about peak traffic time, how many cars are going over in the morning and the evening. Do you have any data regarding what is the average trip in mileage north or south over the bridge? For instance, if I commute from Bayview to the mall, you know, how, do we know what is the average trip length over that length of the bridge?
Yeah. As a part, okay, I'm going to got to remember to repeat the question. The question was, what type of travel demand data is there for vehicles that are using the bridge? Kind of where are they coming from? Where are they going to? How long is their trip, correct?
Well, yeah, specifically I'm curious because most people work within 5 miles of where they live, so their commute is not that far. So if they were to bike to work, I'm curious how many people should take off the street.
Okay, all right, so I think there's actually two questions there, but I'm going to wrap the second one up into the response, which is that, the Southeast Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, or Sewer PAC, as the agency in Southeast region that is charged with basically harvesting all of that travel demand information, they've actually periodically do surveys of folks to basically figure out where they're coming from and where they're going to. It's a very rigorous scientific method, and then they kind of amalgamate that all together where, you know, with with information, basically they have the information where they could come in and say, on this specific bridge, you know, their estimate as they look at the travel demand model says, you know, we think about, you know, this percentage of folks are coming from, you know, this area versus that area, and actually can do quite a bit of that analysis that goes down that road. So, you, sir, right there.
What's the length of a rush hour wait now on the northbound lane, and how much longer would it be if you add on the bike lane and we're down two lanes? So if we're at 15 minutes now, how much longer would it be if you're sitting in traffic?
The question was, what is the delay, sort of overall delay associated with going from across the Hone Bridge down in the future? We didn't really use that tool from the traffic toolbox to do that. We just looked at the speed and density measures that we had. Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple questions. One is, you mentioned, depending on how long it's open, and Chris Larson in an interview today said, when weather permits. So is this something that's only going to be open seasonally or weather permitting, or is this path going to be open full time, or what are you looking at?
Okay, the question was for everyone the overall question is, how much of the year will the path be open? In other words, to what degree will weather or other things be impacted? As part of our feasibility study, we didn't really look at that, but if you may recall, further down, some of those long-term maintenance considerations, should the department go forward with a decision that looks at building one of those, then we would be looking at sitting down with the City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County and discussing some of those very issues and discussing some of those operational parameters. You in the back. The question was, as a part of, should we say, an awareness of what type of other cities and, you know, in basically other areas of the county, or excuse me, other areas of the country, that bicycle and pedestrian facilities that are being used? And the answer is, and areas of the world. Yes, as a matter of fact, we did. I think certainly as a part of doing this feasibility study that a lot of us on our off hours would be, you know, sitting at home, you know, should have had laundry to do, but, you know, you're waiting for the dryer, you click, click, click on the internet, and you kind of look at some of those other alternatives things. So, yes, those were something that we looked at. There's a question on the telephone, so one moment, please. Telephone, come in, please.
Yes, can you indicate what the expected usage is of bike traffic on the bridge? And is that marketing study available to be seen by us?
Okay, I think that question came in fairly loud and clear, but I'm going to go ahead and address that again. The question was, as a part of this feasibility study, did we do any detailed demand estimates of what the usage would be? The answer is no. And, you know, I think there are a lot of folks who would, you know, I think as we've seen, there are a lot of folks on both sides of the issue who, you know, would have suggested that they would or wouldn't use the facility. But honestly, with being able to predict bicycle demand for using a given facility, really it's a very, you know, it's not something that we really have the ability to do. So no, there's no marketing study or anything for it. We do have some information that will be eventually available regarding some counts on some existing trails. But with regards to estimating specifically how many folks would use it, no, we do not. Representative Richards, did you have a question?
I did. I posed it to Duane, but
we will do that.
Yes. My point was that I was glad to hear from the Sheriff Department tonight. It's great to see they're engaged in this issue. But we have other stakeholders who are also directly involved with this from the public sector, one of which is the Port of Milwaukee. The Port of Harbor Commissioners have taken a vote in favor of the project. The Lakefront
Development Advisory Committee, which did a comprehensive recommendation for the Lakefront, also voted in favor. I don't know if anybody is here from that committee tonight, but if they're here, I would like to hear from them. just to give a balanced picture of what's going on.
Balanced picture. Come on.
Okay, we've got time for about three more questions, and hold on, bear with me before we take this again. And I want to thank everybody for your patience in coming out tonight. And again, we have, even for those of you on the phone, if I hold it up, so right here we have those blue sheets that are available. We will still be here after the Q&A, but in order to give folks more of an opportunity to get their questions answered, we want to make sure we can get some time for that. So, three left. Yes, sir. Yes, you.
Okay. Since one of the concerns about this and comparisons that need to be made will be safety issues for vehicles and for bicyclists. When I first came to Milwaukee, I found that the police had a site that basically kept track of murders, robberies by areas, even right down to the street. Is there any sort of information base we can go to that would be able to track bicycle incidents, injuries, accidents, and stuff like that within the Milwaukee area? Does anyone know of such a database?
The question was, is anyone aware of a database that which we could track bicycle-related incidents within Milwaukee County? And, you know, as part of our feasibility study, we did not look at specific safety analysis, and I'm personally not aware of something, but you could certainly send an email to our project manager, and if there's something that pops up, then we would certainly get back to you. You, sir.
This study area is 2.5 miles long, and I don't know the relative cost of the span over the river versus the rest of what we consider the home bridge. When you looked at widening the bridge, did you consider doing that in the areas that are concrete only and not steel, where you would have a taper down the two lanes for a very short segment across the river? Or did you look at the entire length, 2.5 miles, with the same treatment?
The question was, did we look at an option where we would only neck the freeway down to two lanes for a certain stretch of the bridge and leave it at three lanes for the rest of the bridge while maintaining a path across? And the answer is no, we would not, because from an engineering standpoint, to have that diverge and then go back out, it wouldn't meet our engineering criteria. You, sir, in the yellow wish right there.
Has there been any economic justice looked into in relation to this? In other words, people who could not afford to drive but could afford to use bikes.
The question was, as a part of our feasibility study, has there been any economic justice or looking at the use of this and how it could be used by the economically disadvantaged? The answer is no, that it did not, because we focused again on some of the engineering and structural and traffic aspects. You, sir, in the back.
Yeah, I am one of those representatives for the economically underserved. I teach at Riverside High School. We have an extraordinary biking program. We might have 2030 down the Hunt Bridge, September, October, April, May, and June. By extending that program, our ability to keep kids on a safe trail, going up to the bike trail on the south side with more trails is just phenomenal. You could have Bayview High School, Tech High School South Division with biking programs for fitness. It would be an amazing urban asset for reducing or preventing obesity and diabetes and getting
Was there a question there?
And those folks are going to have to down. They have a very similar structure. We go to home, and they have a bike down.
Okay. All right, and the last question of the night will be you right there. Yes, you.
My question is that you don't have usage numbers, but do you have numbers in terms of the number of days where the weather would be prohibitive in terms of safety reasons, either from the standpoint of snow and ice or high wind that might require the bike lane be closed for safety purposes? And if the bike lane would not be closed, and there was an accident up there, who would end up being responsible for any liability?
All right, that was a two-part question. The first part of the question was, as part of the study, did we look at weather, ice, snow, and other environmental conditions and how that would potentially hinder the use of the bike path at certain times? The answer is no, we did not. That's an operational issue that we would move as, you know, if we proceed forward within the study, that would be something that would need to be looked at. The other part of the question is regards to liability for incidents that may happen in the bike path, and I think consistent with, you know, some of the other things that we talked about in terms of who is maintaining it and operating it, that would be a discussion that would need to be done at a further time. So with that, it's 6:33. Again, there's a lot of folks with DOT name tags out there to answer your questions. I apologize if we didn't get to your specific question. But again, I want to thank...
Brian, when will the comments be received?
Okay, the answer, okay, so there's like a two-part question. The first part of the question is, will there be additional public information meetings? The answer is no. The next question is, what is then the deadline for comments using this blue sheet or emailing our project manager? The answer is on November 30th at 5 o'clock p.m. So...
And Brian, I'm going to steal the microphone just for a moment. Is there a member from the Harbor Commission that would like to make a quick statement?
Hi, my name is Craig Mastantuno. At the invitation of Representative Richards, I just wanted to make a quick statement that the Board of Harbor Commissioners, which is the city department that oversees port-related activity in the city of Milwaukee, which, if you look at the aerial map on the east side, really runs on the land all the way on the right side of the map from essentially the south end of the Art Museum down to the Coast Guard station in Bayview. So the project that we're talking about would run directly for large portions of it over port land. We did adopt a position last month. It was adopted unanimously by the board, which supports and is consistent with the city's position in supporting the addition of bike ped traffic over the Hohen as part of the redecking project. I think the debate included at the board level some acceptance of the premise that commercial activity and recreational activity and leisurely activity don't have to be mutually exclusive for a city like Milwaukee. So it was part of the consideration that we took. Thank you.
By tomorrow afternoon, for those of you who want to tune back in and watch the highlights or look at the presentation, that's going to be available. Again, there's going to be a lot of folks that are out there. We're not kicking you out the door. Again, lots of folks here with name tags. If you have follow-up questions, we'd sure appreciate it. Thanks again, everybody, for coming out, and have a safe drive or ride back home.